I do not think our friend will manage.
Oh.
I'm afraid it's too much of an effort for him at this present stage.
Mm-hmm.
He is one who has been greatly helped. As a matter of fact, for a long time, he was earthbound.
Oh, okay.
I've been able to help him. He was a very religious turn of mind, extremely narrow in his will, very much a member of the church, and stayed a long time to get him to alter his idol. By the way, my name is Madison.
Oh, Dr. Madison.
A long time ago. I think I remember I told you at the time that I had been rather interested in this subject, although I had no active part to play in it, but and also I was very much immersed in the church myself, but it's a long time ago. But a part of my work over here has been to help those souls who are in need, who are earthbound particularly, and this friend is one that I have helped, and I brought him with me to a daily experience, but it wasn't really in the sense of my intention that he should come and speak, but rather to watch, because he was so anxious to attempt it that I thought, well, I might as well, but I don't think he'd get ready to converse. He may, no doubt, later prove perhaps even a very good communicator, but for the type of work that you're doing, I feel that you need people who can progress quite well so that you can get as much subject matter for your book, or books, perhaps I should say,
mm-hmm.
because it's obvious that you've got more than one to publish eventually. I think you have to get one published first, but that will be, of course, take a little time perhaps to sort out and find the right person to do it, but you will.
Yes.
I've heard a lot of reports about you, although I haven't been to speak myself. I've heard about your efforts and what you're doing, and I know that all is going pretty well. You may be at the moment a little frustrated, but that'll pass.
Thank you.
Hello, Mr. Wood. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well, thank you. Very well,
Mrs. Green.
Very well,
Mr. And I presume you're going to be in the throes of change again.
Well, we hope I'm going to try and get closer to you. Try and get it more easy, you see.
It rather complicates things, Mrs. Green, joy.
Oh, we've got to keep on with all the work we're doing down there. We should try and do a lot more out here if we can.
Well, it's take your time. I shouldn't rush into it.
Yeah.
I might regret it, you know.
Yes.
You're quite well situated as you are.
Yes.
But it's nothing to do with me after all what you do.
Well, we're trying to do as much work as we can.
But you're not.
Help humanity.
And your health's good there.
Yes.
That's most important.
Oh, it is.
Your residence is quite nice and pleasant. And you're within an hour's throw of London. Good train service.
Yes.
I should think twice about it.
Yes. Yeah. You could be sure to do much with the church fellowship more often than you do, excuse me?
Good heavens, church fellowship. Where's the fellowship first?
I'm glad you said that.
We have a very great difficulty with that. We're trying to do our best.
So what I can make out of it doesn't have a lot of difficulty among them.
Yes, there is. Yes. They don't seem to agree well with themselves.
Of course they don't agree about themselves.
Mm.
I suppose that's rather to be expected. All human beings have all got their own particular idea of things, and of course so many of them are very dogmatic.
Yes.
I'm afraid they'll have to go a long way before they'll get real unity, and change all their views, and make some concessions. The church seems to be having a pretty bad time, what I can make out of it. Criticisms all around, within and without. Well, it had to come sooner or later. There had to be great changes take place in the church before it could help to really do anything that will really stir the people. This truth, this realization, this knowledge is a tremendous experience which they seem so afraid of, which is the very foundation of their teaching, if they could realize it. Only they would accept it and proclaim it. It could make such a vast difference.
their father's doctor, the arts, which was Canterbury, Dr. Lang, left out a mental hospital box we were played around. It's made them really sit up that way.
Well, yes, I hope so. Yes. Out in certain quarters, maybe. But there's still a tremendous opposition. There's a tremendous barrier in the church towards this. I think they fear it, you know. There may be a few here and there open-minded souls who are really genuinely searching and seeking, but the vast majority are dying in the womb, and especially the older generation. It's the younger generation that we look to. Thus, I feel that with them we have great hope. But they died in the womb, the older generation is going to be very difficult.
Mr. Nelson, how did you feel when you crossed over? What were your reactions?
Well, I don't know exactly. When you asked me such a question like that, I had to stop and think.
Mm-hmm.
I think my reaction was one of wonderment. I would say I was surprised, in a sense I was not surprised. I think it is that being blind for so long.
Oh, you were blind?
I had a very strong psychic realization of things. I think the blind have something perhaps that's taken away from them, is given back to them in a hypersensitive way, that they are able to pierce the etheric and they're able to see, which possibly the vast majority of people who have sight do not see many things. I think I was, in a sense, very much aware, put it like that, of the world. I was very conscious of the power of the spirit, and there were times when I was very much lifted into the realms of spirit. And, well, I'm quite sure that when I first came here, it was not exactly a surprise. I suppose in a sense you could say, yes, it was, but when I realized that I no longer had the effort, to make the effort with the body that I had, it's a feeling of having lost the heaviness and the weight, and being able to see in the fullest sense. Everything seemed to be very tangible, very real. There was none of this that some people experience of being uncertain. There was none of this feeling that it was a kind of dream world that so many people do have when they first come here, and so many people think that they're going to wake up as if they were in a sleep and experience the ordinary routine of life on earth again. With me that didn't happen. I think I was very conscious of the fact I was in this new world. In a sense it wasn't altogether a new world to me. I'd been too long aware of it within my own inner soul. I became very conscious of the reality of this world and the solidity of it too. There was none of the wishy-washy sort of atmosphere that some people might have felt or experienced. That to me was a very real world. In a world which I had played some part already for some time, and I suppose it is that in a kind of way I'd already been living in this world before I left the earth. I think that I'd spent so much time mentally and spiritually. I'm not suggesting by that I was essentially or necessarily such a spiritual person in my capacity of my work with the church, as a doctor of the church. I realized that I had an insight into the truth. I think, without appearing bumptious, I think I was more broad-minded and open-minded than many of my contemporaries. I used to receive a lot of inspiration, which I didn't realize then was inspiration in the sense that it was automatic writing that I received. I used to get a great deal of impression, a lot of inspiration. I wrote several hymns, You Love Me No One, No Love That Will Not Let Me Go, which was my best, I think. I think as far as I was concerned, there was nothing really strange about passing. I think I already appreciated the possibility, and the realization that came to me afterwards was a natural one. There was no weirdness or strangeness or feeling that I was in a kind of dream world. To me, it was a living reality forever came here.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we short? Yes. Your parish, was it in England or in the north, was it?
I had just stopped them for many years, of course.
Yes.
But I moved about a bit. No doubt it would like to go further into this, you can check on it all and you can find out. Nothing really matters.
Yeah.
But the whole point is that many people on your side who profess to be interested, even in this subject, when it comes to certain things, they're not ready to receive. I suppose the average person going to a meeting or a seance, if they receive certain personal proof from their relations, that is as far as they go.
Mm-hmm.
In the whole tragedy of the spiritualist movement is that it stays on this one level, so few are prepared to go further and to try to find out more. Certainly very few are interested in the spiritual realization of truth. Very few are concerned with the philosophy. Very few are concerned with what they could receive to help them become better men and women. The majority are far too concerned with self. It seems to me that self is a predominant factor in the spiritualist movement just as much as it is outside.
And could you give something that you a message to the Church Fellowship, because we've got to take to the Church Fellowship. A message direct to them, if you're possible, would you? If you could.
Oh, dear.
Tell them something about your life, you know, and what they'll find themselves in. Something, a message to them, you see. So it'd be a great help if you could do that. Could you do that?
I suppose, yes, of course, but I cannot help but think that these people, well-meaning, sincere in their own fashion, striving to find aspects of truth, and yet afraid at the same time to accept much as we try to tell them. I'm afraid until they become more willing to receive without prejudice, until such time as they can unshackle themselves from a lot of this dogma which has tied them down for so long, the extraordinary thing is that fundamental truth of the Church, the teachings of Christ, all uphold this, and yet they're so afraid, many of them, to go far ahead of it. And if anything should be said by any one of us that in any way is opposite to their own idea, or dogma, or teaching, they won't discard it immediately. In other words, we're supposed to conform to a pattern to please them. It has been to me, so it seems, the most difficult thing of all. We are expected to say the sort of things that they anticipate we should say, to uphold the sort of things which they still hold dear, to confirm to all the dogma and the creed that they uphold, to confine ourselves with a circumscribed sphere. I'm afraid we can't do that, and I think that is the main trouble with them. Because we cannot do that in absolute honesty and sincerity with our knowledge and experience, they either will not accept us and say that they're either impersonators or that there's something wrong with the mediumship. They'll always find excuses to reject truth if it doesn't conform to their own idea. This is a tragedy of the whole movement, seems to me, to be that people will only accept that which they want to accept. In other words, what they are ready to accept. And the vast majority, I'm afraid, although they're sincere enough in their way, unless, of course, we pander to them, and goodness knows what I can make out of it. Some of these people have been pandered to. by certain sons who certainly are not very promised. And I certainly do not intend to join that happy band. I'm afraid that they have got to accept truth, whether they like it or whether they don't. They say they want truth, and when they're given truth, because it doesn't conform to their own ideas, or fall in with what they have themselves been teaching for so long, then of course they say, oh well, this just can't possibly be, because no Christian from the other side would say this or that. But the deuce they expect how are we supposed to conform to a narrow, materially minded, conceived ideology? We are outside time and space, we are outside the narrowness and the confines of the human mind. We have seen illumination and we've seen progression in consequence. But of course we differ, of course we think differently, of course we've got beyond the narrow confines of their creeds and dogmas. We know Christ in the truest sense. And if only they could realize that, it makes such a vast difference to them, it would help them considerably. We mustn't think of the Christ as some mystical personage far removed. Christ was one who suffered as we have all suffered in life, one who came to the world with a mission which he performed, and indeed which changed the outlook of humanity. And ever since, man has endeavored, though very unsuccessfully, to follow him. One could add much to this, one could go into various avenues, and one could say a great deal, but there'd be no point in that. So much of it is so well known, and any churchman, any man worthy of the name, any Christian who likes to think deeply about it, having read and experienced much, will know that this is true. The church has created a great deal of uncertainty in the minds of men. At the same time, individual peoples have done great good and accomplished great things. The power of the Christ within makes all things possible. But until man realizes what Christianity really is, what it really means, there can be no real Christian progression, no real Christian progress. Individually here and there, yes, but collectively en masse, no. The concept of Christ, which the vast number of Christians have, is a very incorrect one. We must realize that Christ was born into the world for this purpose, to become the great teacher and the great prophet, to show the path back to God, to be an example, that we should become like unto him, and in consequence we in turn would inherit the kingdom of God. All men inherit the kingdom of God. It's true that some inherit the kingdom of God, which is on a much larger scale of evolution. It is all part of God's world, all part of God's plan. If only we would endeavor to become something like Christ, then of course we would have a greater opportunity of our life to do the things that Christ said we should do. If we are patterning our lives on Christ, we should office them. Be very different while on earth, and the whole world in consequence would realize it. And there would not be the evils in the world, there would not be the wars, the intolerance and the bitterness. Much that is evil in the world could be removed once peoples realized what Christ really intended, what they should be, what they should become. It's within every man. No one can lack the power of the Spirit, which is dormant within. It's there. It's the part of humanity that lives beyond so-called death. Anyone can be, not only followers of Christ, but they can be, in a sense, Christ themselves. It's not an impossible thing to achieve. It means to sacrifice and how few people are prepared to sacrifice. This is a tragedy of your world. Very few people do sacrifice, are prepared to sacrifice, are prepared to give of themselves. Here and there you do see, and often they are the most humble of people, which is in a way not surprising that they've accomplished the most. It's very rarely those who have much of the world's goods and do very much in a spiritual manner. And in fact, many of those who rise to high places lack much of spirituality. They have become immersed in materialism, and quite often they've only risen to heights because of their materialistic approach and attitude. In earlier life, those who would reach the heights spiritually invariably have little materialism. All the great prophets, all the great teachers, and we're not concerned with material things, but spiritual things. And the power of the church seems to me not so much in its spiritual power, but its material power. And until those who are seeking, and seeking in a sincere way, can realize more fully that in humbleness, only in humbleness, in their approach, will they find truth. It's no good coming to us when your mind's already made up as to what you're going to receive or what you want to receive, and that it must fill exactly what you want it to fill. In other words, it's, if you want us to write a book, don't you give us the sentences and the words. Give us the empty pages and we'll write it. Which they may present us with a book already wrapped up and say, now confirm all this and we'll accept you as souls of great integrity and spirituality. The vast majority of these individuals, well-meaning though they may be in their own fashion, are only concerned with proving what they think is right. And until they approach us with a different attitude of mind, we can't do very much for them. Until they are able to reject certain things that they accept as gospel, we can't help them very much. If they're coming to us with closed minds, with fixed ideas, which we're supposed to support, I'm afraid we shall get very far.
I'm sure that you have praise on that side. You've got all the Christians are offline and I'm releasing that. Is that so?
Not exactly. I think that's it's partially true. I think what was probably tried to be conveyed to you was the fact that certain very narrow-minded sects, groups and individuals who cling very strongly to certain ideals or ideas, do live on certain plans and have their own way of life, and because of their intense fervor or belief, are quite blind to anything else. But you get that in your world. I mean, you take the four square gospelites, Plymouth Brethren and so on. And they're not the only ones, but many others. They're so confirmed in their own idea that they're right and they will listen to nothing else. And in consequence, they build a little world of their own. They enter into the vibration of a condition entirely of their own. And they are probably the most, in fact, I agree here, and I proclaim this. The most difficult people to help are those of a religious turn of mind. Give me a man whose mind is open, who's not cluttered up. We can help him, we can reach him, we can talk to him, we can reason with him. But when we have people whose minds are already well made up, who've got strong views, and they're right in their opinions, and if we say what they say is right, then we're all right by them. That is a tragedy of so many of these people. They will only accept what comes through and confirms what they already believe. And there's a great deal that we have to say and do say that will not confirm what they accept, do not, and will not in any way change them. And I feel sure that they've got to release themselves already from a lot of preconceived ideas and notions.
People like nuns and monks, I'm talking about the really cloistered ones who shut themselves away. Now, but those lady drivers shut themselves away on the other side too, don't they?
But still, certain respects this could apply, but not necessarily to all, by any means. Because, although I personally, generally speaking, do not believe in people being shut away for a religious life, because to me it seems as if they are avoiding all the fundamental issues of life, they're turning their back on temptations and so on. And after all, life is to be lived in experience, and the whole point of living is that you shall make a contribution to it, to better it, and to help. Therefore, I obviously do not agree with Nadarism, monasteries as such. But there is, of course, exceptional instances of individuals who have, without possibly at first realizing it, begun to, through their prayer and meditation, begun to release themselves to some extent from material things, obviously, and have reached certain heights of spiritual transportation that some of them have indeed become extraordinary mediums, but actually there's a lot of mediumship goes on, of which the Catholic Church probably knows very little. That is, I think in some of these monasteries a lot of psychic experiences are experienced. But I do think that generally speaking it's not an ideal condition, because very little good is done by it. I think too, you can get, of course, you can get earthbound souls, nuns, you can get earthbound priests, as you know, that even return to earth sometimes for many years, haunt the place. And of course they do gather together, some of them, in communities here. And not to be, you see, we cannot in a sense generalize, because individuals differ so. Even individuals in a monastery, I think you'd be surprised what goes on in a monastery or another way. How there's little feuds and how there are great differences of opinion and pressure is brought to bear by one against another. Don't think because people put away or go away for a religious retreat that they're necessarily living a harmonious life. I can assure you that in many of these places it's far from harmonious.
What's your matter is the world you're living like? Can you tell us what you're describing to?
Well, I'm sure that many people try to tell you, and have to some extent, the realities of our life. Of course, there again depends what sphere or condition of life you come from. That's why you may get different opinions and different ideas, because some people come from one sphere and give you a completely different picture to another. But the sphere in which I exist is in so many ways not unlike the earth. That is, from the point of view of nature, we have the most beautiful scenery, the most beautiful natural surroundings, flowers, birds, trees, all these things you've heard before, but much more beautiful than anything you know, and certainly much more varied. Houses of all types, I've seen houses of all manner of architecture, of all periods, all shapes and sizes, called by the individuals who build them, live in them. And reality is a vital thing. I mean, you mustn't think for one moment that these houses are not real, that they are sort of wishy-washy and that they have no substance. This is a very substantial world, because we, after all, are vibrating in harmony with it. And in consequence, it is substantial. And everything about it is real. It's not this sort of, as some people think, a sort of ethereal sort of thing. It has an ethereal look, if you like, yes. Certainly some of the buildings and places look most ethereal, and some of those built on the higher planes, they have a look about them of both transparent beauty, but and yet there is, of course, a reality of solidity. The colourings, of course, are beyond description. The colourings are so far removed from anything you know. The colourings are tremendous in their scale and scope. I've seen colours here which I couldn't even begin to describe. There's a radiance about everything here, radiance about the people too, which of course after all is what makes the place, which creates the place. After all, the buildings in themselves would have no reality in life if it were not for the people who radiate from themselves and are creative at the same time. And many of these buildings are built and constructive, by love and by effort. You mustn't think that everything just happens because you want it to. It's true there is a form of life where, shall we say, inspiration makes it possible from the point of view of experience, but there's always a difference between certain stages of evolution or certain planes of evolution. There are these planes or spheres where you do get a kind of thought force or thought power which creates, but in a sense it is an illusion. People go through this quite often in the early stages of progression. They live in a world of thought. I wouldn't like to use, I have used the word illusion, it's not exactly illusion. Until such time as they progress, they live in that state which suits them. But it is not the reality. They haven't yet achieved or received or entered into a sphere of reality. I think every condition of life is suitable for people concerned. Everyone enters a condition of life which they be suited, and in a sense they do live for a time, until such time as their eyes have been opened and they progress sufficiently in a state of wishful thinking, if you like. It's very difficult to explain this, because we must remember that we are thinking of untold millions of people, all human, and of varying stages of evolution and development. And what is natural to one is natural to another. But my own sphere is a reality. But of course, as I progress, no doubt it will cease to exist for me, and I shall enter into a new state. And that's how it is, that you go from stage to stage, and step to step, evolution all the time. That is eternal life. If it were standing still, it couldn't be, and it would cease to exist. We must always be progressing. Maybe so slow, we hardly realize it, but it is so. We are all the time changing. That's why sometimes when we come back, we live in a new world, and particularly to the state of the mind of so many people who profess to, well, profess to be sincerely Christian in their outlook. It seems to me that although they are Christian in a sense, their attitude and their experience is so little, they don't seem to be progressing at all. They seem to be standing still. Their minds are closed. They're not prepared to accept anything that clashes with our preconceived ideas. It's appalling to us.
How do you pass your time, you think, that's right?
Oh, in many ways. I lecture. Well, this may sound odd, but I do. I go into other spheres and I discuss and I talk and I try to help and enlighten and uplift those less fortunate, especially those planes very near here. And that is the task of many of us who have progressed to some extent, is to help the less fortunate. Anyway, I must go, but another time we'll discuss this further. But don't expect that that some of your recordings will be very acceptable to our brethren, but don't let that upset or worry you. I must go. May God bless you. Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mickey.
Thank you.